is Latin America about to find itself the setting for a second Cold War? That's the looming question as Chinese influence spreads across the region. At stake, national security in America and Taiwan on the global stage. That's as a new president enters office in Honduras. The small country now lies at the center of a tug of war between the U.S. and China. In this special report, we look at what the region's predicament means going forward, how Americans could be in danger, and how money is at the heart of the problem.
Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. The world watched as unprecedented protests broke out in Cuba last summer against the island's communist regime. But soon, those videos vanished from the internet. The calls for freedom, silent. Cubans soon found their internet cut off. But was it just the Cuban government cracking down? Turns out many of the country's internet servers are controlled somewhere else. Behind Cuba's internet access are a slew of Chinese companies, Huawei, TP-Link, and ZTE. A 2017 report by the Open Observatory of Network Interference found traces of Chinese code in interfaces for Cuban Wi-Fi portals. For the Cuban government, the internet has never been free. Since 1996, when it was first regulated, access to the internet has been granted selectively. Since then, the rules have only gotten stricter. Even sales of internet modems and personal computers became restricted. That's according to a 2003 report from Reporters Without Borders entitled Internet Under Surveillance. Instead, only certain state employees are allowed to go online. And China seems to be backing Cuba in controlling what can or cannot be said or seen online. How does that kind of influence happen? One word, money. China is Cuba's second largest trading partner, the first being Venezuela. In 2020, Chinese exports to Cuba topped over $480 million. That's according to the United Nations Comtrade database on international trade. So why is China funneling so much money into Cuba? Let's look at a map. Cuba is a close neighbor to the Southeast United States.
We don't want China to get close enough to have listening posts where they can do observations and things. So my understanding is that there's one in Cuba, and it's manned by Chinese troops.
China economic analyst Antonio Grosseffo notes that China wants that access. But it seems China is eyeing more than just Cuba. On January 27th, the first female president in Honduras takes office.
Yes, well, Xiomara Castro, that is the president-elect for Honduras, told during her campaign that she was interested in shifting diplomatic relations from Taiwan to China. And this was especially related to her interest to finance ambitious infrastructure projects. And of course, the money is in Beijing.
Researcher at Impunity Observer Paz Gomez notes that as of now, Honduras is one of the few countries that recognizes Taiwan rather than Beijing. But aside from growing political fears over a potential switch to China, the U.S. has a much bigger fear. Just like Cuba, Honduras is close to the coastal U.S.
Now, Honduras, if they could put a listening post there, they could observe, you know, how our ships are traveling, our patterns, figure out, because our Navy trains, of course, in the Caribbean, and they could find that out. Also, we're training, we're doing joint exercises with nations that we're friendly with, and so China would be able to observe those more easily.
But how exactly could China take advantage of that geography?
China will come and build a very highly visible infrastructure project. They will loan the host country the money to pay for the project. The host country will then use the money to pay Chinese companies to build the project. And now the host country is on the hook to China. They owe China money. They have to pay interest. And all the money has already come back to China through construction companies. And the projects that China builds are very generally, we call them mega projects now. And these are large infrastructure projects which are very visible.
That's under China's infrastructure outreach policy known as the Belt and Road Initiative.
While doing these infrastructure projects, China also provides credits, because our Latin American countries do not have the liquidity to finance these projects at once. So this also ties the countries with China. And in the case that some of them default, what could happen is that China gain more control of the management of these projects.
With that control comes power and influence.
As China gains more influence in these kind of projects in the region, they are also kind of removing key points for the United States. Not because the United States had been intervening like explicitly in the countries, but because at the end, if something happens in a geopolitical situation, the logical allies of the United States were the Latin American countries.
But what happens if the U.S. calls on these Latin American countries for help?
If they have a commitment with other countries, it will be more difficult for these countries to say, for example, Honduras, in the case that they decide to go with China, it is going to be more difficult to say, I logically support the United States, I logically support the Republican democratic system, because they have some commitments with China.
One way of gaining that kind of economic leverage is through debt.
This is happening in Honduras, even if they are not having explicit relations with China. According to the World Bank, right now Honduras has 4% of its external debt with China and just 0.01% of the external debt with the United States. So those kind of things, of course, influence at the moment of taking decisions in the diplomatic realm. And that is going to happen with the rest of Latin American countries.
China can use those financial obligations as a kind of leverage, which is why some refer to the Belt and Road Initiative as debt trap diplomacy. And that kind of influence has been setting off alarms in the U.S. Just last year, Congress held a hearing titled China in Latin America and the Caribbean. Topics covered in that hearing included China's strategic approach from economic to military. And part of those ambitions is being realized through the Belt and Road Initiative. So far, 19 countries in Latin America have signed up. Cuba is one of them. Cuba first signed on in 2018 and last year expanded the partnership into the energy sector.
Latin America, I mean, this is our backyard. I mean, Cuba, you know, you're talking about 90 miles from the U.S. coast, and there's Chinese military there. There's Chinese military in Tierra del Fuego, you know, in Patagonia and southern Argentina. You've got a listening post, a space station that's being manned by the PLA.
That space station in question is the Espacio Lejano station, tucked into Patagonia's deserts. The issue goes back to 2014, when Argentina's administration signed a secret deal with China. That deal predates the Belt and Road, but had already sparked concerns, mostly because the 50-year agreement restricts what Argentina has sovereign control over. The agreement also allows Chinese to move freely in the country and operate under Chinese labor laws in Argentina rather than under Argentine law. China's space program is run by its military, unlike NASA in the U.S., which is independent of the government. As a result, the space station in Patagonia is under the control of the China Satellite Launch and Tracking Control General, an organ that reports directly to the Chinese Military Strategic Support Force. This has raised serious concerns in the U.S. over the potential for espionage. Director of the U.S. National Radio Astronomy Observatory, Tony Beasley, told Reuters the space station, in theory, could be used to listen in on other government satellites. As for locals in the area, they told Reuters the space station isn't actually for scientific research. Instead, they called it a Chinese military base. Now, the question is, what happens if several more are built? Some fear this could lead to a second Cold War. Latin America found itself at the center of the original Cold War, as conflict played out between U.S. capitalism and Soviet socialism for several decades. But a second round would have different players. This time, it would play out between the U.S. and Communist China instead of the Soviet Union.
I tell you, China poses a greater threat than Russia ever did. Russia never had the money, they never had the influence, nothing. I mean, China is co-opting organizations all over the world at the very low level and at the very high level, and this absolutely needs to be addressed.
As for other areas of concern in Latin America, Brazil maintains a lot of military cooperation with China, including its using a Chinese state-owned company to rebuild its Antarctic base and communication systems. The two countries also held an unprecedented joint naval drill in 2013, featuring warships from both nations. But arguably most concerning to the U.S. is their partnership on satellites. A U.S. congressional hearing notes the partnership goes back decades, starting in 1999. As these countries become more dependent on Beijing for their economic means, the U.S. grows increasingly wary of what that dependency will mean going forward. Not only will these Latin American countries become less free and more like the totalitarian rule in communist China, but those effects could ripple over into other free markets like the United States. As Latin America research professor with the U.S. Army War College, Robert Evan Ellis, told Congress, "The challenge posed by China is different, yet in many ways greater than that posed by the Soviet Union during the Cold War." Now we turn to today's news. Coming up, the U.S. Navy is trying to retrieve a $100 million advanced fighter jet after it plunged into the South China Sea. Now authorities are facing concerns that China might get to it before the U.S. More on that after the break. The U.S. is trying to haul a $100 million American warplane from the depths of the South China Sea. The aircraft is a F-35 fighter jet, the Navy's most advanced jet. It fell into the disputed waters after a landing mishap during routine flight operations. That's while it was attempting to land on the U.S.'s Carl Vinson aircraft carrier. The U.S. Navy confirmed the aircraft went under after it made impact with the carrier's flight deck. A statement from the Navy says seven sailors were injured. The pilot ejected from the aircraft and was taken to safety in a U.S. military helicopter. The damage to the aircraft carrier is superficial, and all equipment needed for flight operations still functions. Though the Navy has not revealed where in the South China Sea the crash took place, China claims about 90% of the South China Sea, though the U.S. and other nations dispute those claims. The U.S. Navy was also asked about an unsourced media report. The report suggested there were fears that China could also try to retrieve the crashed aircraft. The fleet spokesperson replied that the Navy cannot speculate on China's intentions. U.S. diplomatic staff inside China are making a request to the State Department to let them and their families leave the country. CNN cited sources familiar with the matter, saying the request for an authorized departure was made amid growing concerns about China's strict pandemic containment measures. The term authorized departure doesn't refer to a formal order. Instead, it gives diplomats, their families, and their staff the option to stay out of China until they feel it's safe to return. Sources said this request has not yet been approved. Responding to NTD's request for comment, the State Department said the status of the U.S. mission in China has not changed. A spokesperson also added that any potential changes will be based on the health, safety, and security of State Department employees and their family members. On the other hand, Chinese state-controlled media have denounced the U.S. request. One outlet, the Global Times newspaper, called it a dirty trick. The request was reportedly driven by fear of tightening pandemic protocols in recent months, including some measures that could separate parents and children. Currently, the U.S. diplomatic mission in China has an agreement with China's foreign ministry that parents will remain with their children in case of quarantine. But U.S. diplomats worry that China's health agency could potentially reverse that deal. In other news, more information has come to light concerning U.S. diplomats in China. According to State Department records, at least one U.S. diplomatic official was given an anal swab test by Chinese health workers. Judicial Watch obtained the documents, which reveal the test was conducted at the official's apartment. The American group is known for filing freedom of information lawsuits against government misconduct. In response to a lawsuit against the State Department, it secured a number of emails between officials, confirming the anal swab was done. Here's a look at one of those emails. It was sent on January 22nd of last year by a U.S. Consulate General officer in the Chinese city of Shenyang. The subject reads, "New testing method." The email explains that a colleague tells our group that he was given an anal COVID swab at his apartment. All names mentioned in the email were redacted. A reply to that email appears to confirm the incident, noting the official was given little notice and no alternative options to getting the invasive swab. It says he had to do both a nose and anal swab. Hollywood movie star Keanu Reeves may face a boycott in China. His recently released movie, The Matrix Resurrections, is under fire. That's after American magazine Rolling Stone announced the star would join a benefit concert for Tibet in March. Patti Smith, Trey Anastasio, and Jason Isbell were also added to the concert's lineup. The Matrix Resurrections opened in China last month. In retaliation for the concert lineup, some so-called Chinese nationalists are calling for a boycott of the movie. The Tibet House U.S. was founded in the 80s. Its yearly benefit concert aims to preserve Tibetan culture. In 1950, the Chinese Communist Party took Tibet by force and has been trying to eliminate Tibetan traditional culture ever since. 2 years after the CCP virus was first detected in the central Chinese city of Wuhan, a man whose father died from the virus is calling for answers, accountability, and an apology from the authorities.
2 years ago, Chinese authorities locked down Wuhan, sealing millions of residents inside their homes for over 2 months. Today, similar strategies continue in other areas across the country. Amid the second anniversary of the virus lockdown in Wuhan, a man whose father died from the virus writes an open letter to Chinese leader Xi Jinping, calling on him to hold the responsible officials accountable.
I have the right to express our heartfelt wishes and indignation. We demand these officials should be punished by law. We demand an open apology. We demand compensation.
Zhang's father was admitted to a Wuhan hospital for a fracture in January 2020, the early days of the outbreak. He then contracted the virus and later died. What concerns Zhang is that during the early days, very little was being said about the outbreak and few people were being warned to stay away from Wuhan. Zhang later sued Wuhan authorities for covering up the severity of the virus, but has since faced harassment.
I felt that in China, as a Chinese person, if you come across a misfortune, it's very hard for you to speak out. At the same time, you yourself will face invisible oppression all around, because they control all the resources. They have power and influence.
Zhang says when he planned to travel to Wuhan recently, four men came to his door and prevented him from leaving his home for a few days. Similar incidents happened to several others in Wuhan for publicizing details about the virus and government response. Including Dr. Li Wenliang, he was among the first to sound the alarm about the virus, but was reprimanded and investigated for spreading rumors. He later died from the virus. And Zhang Zan. She is a former lawyer and has posted videos from Wuhan during the lockdown online. She was sentenced to 4 years in prison.
What I'm angry about is that it has been 2 years since the Wuhan outbreak, yet there is no persuasive investigation conclusion so far.
Zhang says he didn't trust the World Health Organization's investigation into the origins of the virus.
They just rushed a so-called investigation. I don't recognize the investigation, nor do many other Wuhan families.
But the request to find the virus's origin remains unanswered. People in Wuhan are still affected by the pandemic, and they're still subject to strict lockdown measures. In fact, China has adopted a zero-case policy. Since December, authorities have sealed some 20 million people inside their homes.
At this time, after 2 years, I appeal to all the people hurt by the virus to stand up for a fair, just, genuine, and independent investigation into the origins of the virus, so as to give an explanation to the departed.
Boxes of produce are tossed out like trash, though many are still unspoiled. Meanwhile, many people under lockdown have no access to fresh food, and for some, dwindling access to any food at all. This woman with a northern Chinese accent filmed this scene. She's heard saying, "Take a look, boxes full of vegetables, all of them are full, all dumped into the trash." Then she takes a zucchini from a box. It's in perfect condition. She says, "These are good, but all dumped, boxes and boxes." She then says, "These are donations from somewhere, don't know where." Next, she shows a box of beans, some of which are still in good condition. Some other boxes appear to have remained sealed. This is not the only case of its kind. The city of Xi'an has been under lockdown for over a month. A resident from a nearby city, together with other volunteers, made around 10,000 loaves of Chinese flatbread and donated them to Xi'an for the people under lockdown. That was at the beginning of January. To be able to produce such a large amount of bread, the resident closed his own restaurant for days. But video from later in January appears to show the bread ended up in the trash, still in its original package. Many are asking why the authorities seem to prefer that these supplies go to waste instead of going to residents in need. One netizen says it could be related to the high-priced produce the authorities and some companies sell to residents. They write, "How to force people to buy high-priced food if they don't throw them away? How do some companies monopolize community food deliveries if they don't throw them away?" Now we look at a survey that studies how much trust citizens of different countries have in their own governments. Communist China topped the list, whereas the U.S. sits near the bottom. The poll shows that Chinese people's average trust in the Chinese regime is 83%, where Americans' average trust in the U.S. government is only 43%. A U.S. communications firm called Edelman conducted the survey. But Daniel Yuping, a former China director at the American Bar Association's Rule of Law Initiative, is casting doubt over the survey results. He told news outlet Voice of America that if Western companies were to poll in China, they have to get approval from authorities first, and the poll has to be conducted under supervision. Some Chinese netizens are also reacting to the poll on Twitter. One user wrote, "Chinese residents could face arrests if they say they don't trust their government." Another user wrote, "What about people in North Korea? Their trust in their government should be 100%, because those who refuse to trust their government should have been shot." Another user added, "North Korea should be the one that tops the list instead of China." And that's all for today's China in Focus. Thanks for watching, and see you tomorrow.